Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. If you've got our promo, you know that this show kicks off what will be a four-part series for Black History Month. And I want to tell you up front, today's show alone could be four shows, maybe even six. So obviously, I will not be able to get to everything that I'm so dying to get to. Been very frustrated this entire week trying to figure out how I could pare things down to 50, 55 minutes. I'm going to do my best, but I'm telling you up front, what I'm going to do today is not even the tip of the iceberg. The iceberg is still totally submerged underneath the opening sea. But I hope I will give you enough that you will want more. And we'll talk about that possibly before we get off the air. Okay. I'm going to start right into this. 1619, late August. Two men are hurrying to get to a particular point walking along the shoreline. There, and these two men, one I think is a deputy governor of Virginia Colony, and the other man is like the secretary treasurer, whose job it is to record everything in detail for the parent company back in London. These two men, they get to a certain spot, and there is a ship, a warship. And it supposedly, they write the following account, that this ship appeared in the ocean mysteriously. The captain got off, and he said that his ship had been severely damaged to the point where he didn't think he could sail away any further and keep the ship afloat, and that he was in great need of provisions and material to repair his ship. He had no funds, but he had 20-odd Africans, which he traded for these provisions and material to repair his ship. That's a paraphrasing of two or three sentences that have become the absolute record, the authentic record of the arrival of the first Africans to what would become the United States of America. That's it. Two lines, three lines, and that's it. And for 400 years almost, those four lines have been the go-to, the Bible, describing the Africans who would help settle. I'm going a little ahead of myself now, but giving you a clue. These Africans would help settle, stabilize the Virginia colony, and I'll get to that a little later. Compare that to the maiden voyage of the Mayflower 1 year later and its arrival to Virginia colony. There have been movies, books, TVs, miniseries, you name it, describing that audacious experience, the arrival of the Mayflower and the Puritans on board. Compare the arrival of 20-odd Africans also to the first Thanksgiving. How many movies and books and stories have been written and told from preschool to college, you name it, throughout 400 years? Think about it. Volumes. Volumes. Now, the two lines, the three lines, they have become the truth. You know that old saying that if you tell a lie often enough that people begin to believe it, it becomes the truth? And I just gave you a clue. Those three lines were a complete, almost complete lie. Yes, there were Africans on board. Yes, they were supposedly let off the ship in payment of supplies and et cetera. That is a lie. No hesitation, no mitigation, it was a lie. I won't tell you the true story yet, but I'll say this. The incident that took place was part of a much, much larger big picture story that would unfold over decades or so or more, but a story that had been in the making even decades in the plural before the arrival of this ship in 1619. And what this arrival would do from that day forward is monumental. And the importance has really never been discussed in textbooks, in movies, you name it. And if you are anyway familiar with a book called The Lies My Teacher Told Me by James Lowell, a sociology professor who maybe a decade or so, took the leading textbooks for high school, and he analyzed them, and he found tons and tons and tons of inaccuracies, tons and tons of half-truths, tons and tons of straight-out lies, fabrication. And he wrote the book, The Lies My Teacher Told Me. It became a bestseller. New York Times, you name it, whatever list, it was a bestseller. What I'm going to tell you today could be straight out of his book. There's another book called The Half Never Told. It's about slavery. And supposedly this author is giving you, and I say supposedly because I kind of subscribe to his message and his documentation, of how slavery really came about, and especially during the 17 into the 1800s, and the role of capitalism, and et cetera. But the important thing was this title, was a path that's never been told. Again, today's story is straight out of that half that has never been told. A third book that you may be familiar with, and it's called We Can't Teach What We Don't Know. And that helps explain why teachers are using the curriculum that's given to them and the pedagogy that they're required to follow, help spread the lies, the half-truths, for centuries. So, today, I'm going to do a little bit of trying to explain why it's a lie, its importance, and et cetera, et cetera. But I also, I've been thinking all week, the audience here has almost consistently been teachers, some teachers who are parents as well as teachers, super majority women, and white. And I was wondering, today and maybe the next three Sundays, some of the things that I'm going to talk about may create a lot of cognitive dissonance. Now, we've talked about cognitive dissonance. I told you it's one of the most important, if not the most important, concept / theory to emerge out of social psychology in both traditions of social psych, both the psychological orientation and the sociological orientation. Because you're going to get some information that you never heard before, and many of you, maybe not as many as I'm thinking or what have you, you've heard the stories about the Africans and later the African Americans. And what I'm going to say not only challenge what the stereotypes have been and have been considered truths, they're going to destroy them. So let's get to it. 1619. The ship carrying these 20-odd, and they said 20-odd because it could have been 23, 24. They didn't want to know. So let me just start with the two men. As I said, the two men were employees of the Virginia Company of London. The Virginia Company of London had a monopoly on establishing colonies in the New World. And we didn't call it, I guess they called it America then, but maybe not, but what would become the United States of America. And having the monopoly gave them the right to establish all colonies. They had only established the one colony in 1607, but they had the potential of establishing hundreds of colonies. Now, going to the big picture, England had been in a war with Spain and Portugal for decades. And before that, they were in conflict over, you remember Henry VIII? You remember that guy, you know, one who chopped off his wife's head because they didn't have male children? You know, he should have been chopping off some, probably his penis, but he was the reason why they wouldn't have male children. I don't want to digress, but anyway. When he was chopping off the heads, he wanted the Church of England, which was Catholic, to bless his actions, give him annulments, and etc. When they wouldn't, he chopped off the head so he could remarry. You know that story. He eventually banned the Catholic Church, took him out of England, and set up the Anglican Church. That, of course, was a major source of conflict between the Roman Catholic Church and its in Italy, Spain, and in Portugal. They would have wars. You know this from your own study of history. They would have wars back and forth, blah, 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 blah. Well, in the early 1600s, Queen Elizabeth, she died, and one of her relatives assumed the throne, King James. James wanted to cease the hostilities between England and Portugal, the wars, and what have you. And he wanted to cement the better relationships by having one member of his family marry a member of the ruling family in Spain. There was, at this particular time, Spain and Portugal were doing grand business with Africa, the continent. and the various kingdoms in Africa. And they had been doing for maybe close to 100 years. They were bringing riches galore back to their countries. Well, James wanted to get in on that, but there was a problem. His country has been warring with Portugal and Spain, and part of the war, English warships were raiding the Atlantic looking for Portuguese and Spanish ships that were carrying all kinds of treasures, and they were pirate ships coming out of England with the blessing of Queen Elizabeth. And so James, with his grand plan, said that if Spain and Portugal, if he could redo the treaties and et cetera, he would ban piracy so that the pirate English ships would not be raiding the Spanish and Portuguese ship. Okay. That was very, very important. In fact, you'll find out it's like the most important thing. Well, 1619, also the King James decided that he wanted to be Donald Trump. Oh, I didn't mean to say that. He wanted to almost abolish the English Parliament and return England back to a period where the king had absolute power. Absolute power. And his Parliament and other English countrymen were afraid that if they gave him, the Magna Carta, let me throw that in. Remember the Magna Carta? I think I talked about it in year one, year two, how the knights and the peasants got fed up over the king, absolute power and misuse of it, and et cetera. And they told the king, the knights did, cool it or we'll behead you. And as a result, a compromise was developed around certain principles that became known as the Magna Carta, which became known as the basis for English law, which became known as the basis for American law. Okay. Well, James wanted to get rid of all of that, and there were members in his parliament that weren't having it, and one member in particular, named Richard Rich, from a very powerful family, very influential, lots of money and influence. He was a Puritan, and there was no way in hell the Puritans were going to support the return of Catholicism as the absolute religion for England. Okay. Now, this is pretty the story that I'm going to tell, but you got to understand this part before you go understand the rest. So, Rich was a very close confidant of the king. Well, unknown to the king, Rich was also perhaps the leading opponent of the return of absolute power, the return of the Catholic Church, and behind the king's back, he was the leader of one of the biggest conspiracy and potential coups up to that day. Now, the ship that was in the port in Virginia was really one of two ships, two pirate ships. Two English pirate ships who set up on a Spanish/Portuguese ship carrying 350 slaves. They attacked the ship, disabled it, boarded it, and they took 60 of the slaves. It only took 60 because warships had very small below deck space, so they could only carry approximately 30 slaves each. and they made their way to Virginia, folks. Not disabled, and etc. Because the two men on the shore waiting for them, as I said before, they were part of a conspiracy. They work for Sir Richard Rich, unknown to the king, who had appointed them to be part of the governance of Virginia. They were secretly working to disable his plan of becoming absolute power, developing a relationship with Spain and Portugal, and they falsified the records. They didn't give names of the captain. They didn't give names of the ship. They didn't tell any details other than that little sketch that I gave you earlier. Now, the Africans aboard the ship that was put on the shore, they were Africans, yes, but they were kind of a sort of like elite African group. They were Angolans. The country still has that name today, Angola. I'm going to take 5 minutes and tell you about Africa. Africa, 1300 to 1400 to 1500s, into the 1600s. Was nothing like you have been taught over the last 400 years. Not that we're 400 year old, so, but over the last 400 years. Africa and parts of Africa, the continent, which was, by the way, the second largest continent in the world, they had kingdoms that would not only rival European kingdoms, but was more advanced, more cultured, more civilized, if you want to use that word, than many of the European kingdoms. They had, some of them had paved roads. Stop and think for a second. Paved roads. We've got areas in this country where we still don't have paved roads. Country roads and et cetera. They had paved roads. They had cities, had populations of 100,000 or more. They had homes built like you find today, but, you know, different architects, of course, different material. But anyway, they had those types of homes that they lived in. They had universities. Yeah, universities. They had a system of education, and what would prove to be even more important, they had developed a system of agriculture, domestication of animals, and I can go on and on and on. The Angolans had one other advanced technology that helped set them apart. They were known as iron workers. Whether or not they developed and discovered how to make steel and how to forge it, how to shape it, I'm not sure, but they had this technology before the Europeans. They had steel weapons. They had steel farm implements. If that technology helped them to conquer many of their neighbors. And in the process of decades of warring between nations in Africa, the Angolans developed a keen sense of military tactics and strategies and military formations and on and on and on. So much so that when the Portuguese landed on Africa with the intent of colonizing it, they got their asses kicked by a bunch of Africans. Not once, but many times for a long time. And same with the Spaniards. Now, But one thing that came out of the contact with Africa, with Portuguese and with Spain, both being Catholic countries, was the successful introduction of Christianity. Thousands, hundreds of thousands of Africans, maybe millions, would convert to Catholicism. And as a result of that, a relationship, many of the kings and queens would convert their whole tribes, of whatever you want to call it, people would convert. They learned, some of the leadership learned to speak Italian or French or Portuguese, to read and write. They exchange ambassadors to the various countries, and those countries exchange sent their ambassadors to. And folks, they didn't run around with bones stuck in their nose and loincloths over their private parts. People had fine silk garments and elaborate castles, the whole nine yards. Way more than the English. And so the Angolans, and here's the main point I want to tell you, those 20-odd were from Angola. Angola, as I mentioned, their people were far more advanced than anyone had given them credit for. Across Africa, and one last point here, across Africa, like across Europe, going back to Rome, going back to Grecian history, what have you, when kingdoms went to war with each other, the victor would capture population, turn them into slaves. They would use the slaves to build their empire. They would use the slaves to increase their wealth through slaves doing what slaves were told to do, and etc. These Angolans were very good at all of this. So when they came off the ship, Virginia was about to get 20-plus Africans who would change their lives. If you remember your history, the colonization of Virginia did not go well, went terribly badly, to be frank, in the early years. There was a starving period where they ran out of food, they hadn't learned how to cultivate food and domesticate animals, and there was this one period where one winter, hundreds of the new colonists would die. Things were so bad, there was a story where a man killed his wife, drained the blood out of her, preserved her, and ate through the winter her body. That's how bad it was. Also, that led to being very short-handed, so the colony itself was in dire need of help, labor. And what they got in those 20-odd Africans was way more than they ever thought. They got people who, as I mentioned earlier, were great farmers, agriculturalists. They got people who raised livestock. Didn't just go out and hunt and kill them. They raised livestock. They got people who had ideas and knowledge of how to raise crops seasonally so that they would have a food source all year round. They literally, figuratively helped the colony survive and stabilize. During this period, they also, I'm going to say I'm go back a little bit. The issue, there's been an issue for 400 years. These 20-odd Africans, were they slaves or were they indentured servants? In England, they had indentured servitude. And to get people to come to the new colony, and especially those who maybe wanted to come to escape what was happening in Europe or in England at that particular time and didn't have the money, they signed on as indentured servants, and which means that they would get to the colony, they would work for someone for a term of 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, maybe up to 7 years, not usually beyond that. And then they would be free, and they would get a helping hand from the Virginia colony, company, in the form of some land and maybe a rifle or a musket or what have you to be able to start their own farms. And so with the people that came over, they weren't skilled farmers. They were city dwellers. And that contributed to their downfall in the early years and later years as well. To get more people to come to the colony, they started emptying out prisons in England, sending people who couldn't read or write, didn't know jack about farming and surviving under the conditions which they were going to encounter. And so those 20-some-odd Africans was even more important the longer they stayed there. And some of the things that you have no idea about until hopefully now I'm going to tell you about, those Africans, some were treated as indentured servants. A few were treated as slaves, straight-out slaves with no term limits. So you have a mixture of what really happened to those Africans. They were slaves on a slave ship. They were destined to go to the Caribbean or South America, or they were coming from the Caribbean or South America to go elsewhere, but they were slaves. And most likely they were slaves in their country of Angola because they were people who lost a war and who were put into slavery by the conquering side, and here's another key point. The men most likely were warriors. They were almost like there was a term, but it was not this term, but like the stereotypic term of the ninjas. They were skilled warriors. And the kings and queens of Africa were more than delighted to sell them to the Europeans, getting them out of their country so that they could not come back and war again later. So you get men who were strong agriculturalists, but they were also experienced and skilled fighters, warriors. You get a lot in these people. But again, you will never find in any of the textbooks and most of the history books, especially all written before probably the year 2000, 2005. New scholarship has come out supporting some things that I'm telling you now by most reputable scholars across the globe. But anyway, so now you get them there. They are either in indentured service for a term of years. There are those slave owners who want to keep them for life because of what they can do for them, the owners, in terms of wealth. And also, keep this in mind, Virginia colony itself was set up by, as I mentioned earlier, the Virginia Company of London. The Virginia Company of London is the forerunner to the modern-day corporations. You could almost call it a multinational because they were in London and they set up the colony in what is going to become America. And they did it for one reason: profit. Profit. Not politics, not religion, not expanding the realm, but for profit. So, sounds kind of familiar to today. And you have situations where the Africans were not treated, I mean, they were, indentured servitude was rough work, but they had rights. They had the prospect of becoming, quote, getting out of indentured servitude. A lot of them did. And here's something else. They were not segregated like we have today. Black African males, when they were released from their servitude, married white English Irish women. English men married African women. There were no laws, customs, social customs prohibiting such relationships. They had children. They had some of the indentured servants. They, when they got their freedom, they were able to start their own farms. Some became extremely wealthy and influential. And said they intermarried, laying the basis of, well, you find blacks with white, quote, blood, I'm just using these general terms, and then blacks with white blood. It started with these Africans. Think about that. It started with these Africans. And today in America, we have millions of people who have mixed ancestry that you can prove with your DNA, Ancestry.com, and what have you. Now, I would love to go into great detail about those 20 Africans themselves, because each have a story that is more than worth telling. But I'll generalize here, because again, we only have so much time. Those Africans, starting with the males, not only did they introduce techniques and knowledge for farming and animal husbandry and et cetera, they also introduced their knowledge, experience, and skills in the arena of the military, militia. They fought with the militia. And they were fighting with the militia against the Native Americans, as you know that period, and some of them became officers. You never hear about these guys. They also became influential in terms of given positions of authority and power in the governmental structure of Virginia. They helped with becoming more skilled navigators because they had sea experience, and they were, many of them could read and write when the colonists couldn't read or write. One guy I'm thinking about in particular, he was so literate, so learned, that one white woman who inherited the plantation and wealth from a, when a husband died, hired him to become her lawyer. We're talking back in the 1600s, people. He represented her and her estate and legal affairs. And other Africans, as I said, became famous warriors and helped protect and preserve the colonies from outside attacks. And for the decades following 1619 into the 20s and the 30s and the 40s, many of these Africans, once they got their freedoms, they, as I said, they married, started their own family, and they also started their own farms, expanding the range of Virginia colony more so than anyone, again, has any idea about. And this is why people now are beginning to realize and calling these 20-some-odd, I keep saying 20-odd because that's the way in which they, these two guys wrote it. It's 20-odd Africans. They're calling them the founders of Black America, recognizing to a considerable extent that from the very beginning, there was and would become two Americas. We use that term today, two Americas, one black, one white, one free, one not, something that has been written about over the past 400 years. And so these Africans are the founders, the forerunners of Black America. Also, we will begin to recognize the fact that, in a broader sense, these Africans also were the founders of America in general. Let's go back to King James. When it was discovered that one of his close confidants, member of Parliament, was involved in the piracy of the Africans from the English ship, I'm sorry, the Spanish ship, he sort of went berserk, I guess would be a correct thing. And one of, and when he found out that, of course, Rich was a Puritan and what have you, he blamed the Virginia Company in total for being involved in this or not discovering this, so that he used this pretext to basically shut down the Virginia Company in the form of the Virginia Company of London had a monopoly to colonize all of America, in theory, or that part of America that wasn't being occupied by the French or the Spanish. And this was huge. This was any company's dream, to have a monopoly, to be able to set up these colonies and extract wealth from them, untold wealth. Well, James stripped them of their monopoly. And here is something, folks, if there's a drum roll, I would be doing the drum roll. It was because of the theft of these 20 Africans that the United States, as we know it today, is not Southern Canada. Listen to what I just said. It is not Southern Canada. Because of the theft of the slaves, the king stripping the Virginia company of this monopoly, it opened the door. It opened the door for other companies to get license charters to set up colonies in America. And guess what colonies sprung up within months, years of all of this? How about New York, Massachusetts, the Carolinas? How about Rhode Island, Connecticut? How about all of the, quote, original 13 colonies, 12 of the original 13 colonies, came about as a result of the theft of these 20 Africans from this Spanish ship by English pirates. Those now states would have never come into existence if it had not been for this incident. While the Africans themselves did not perpetrate this incident, and while they just happened to be the cargo, the commodities on the ship at this particular time, it was the theft at them and bringing them to Virginia that led directly to the Virginia Company of London losing its monopoly, opened the door for the Puritans to come in, the Dutch to come into New York, and the Quakers coming into Pennsylvania, and other groups that were dissatisfied with life and conditions in Europe, and particularly in English. They owe it to that incident in August of 1619. That is huge. That is monumental. Think about it. If it had not happened as a theft, as act of piracy, we have no idea what this land would look like today. Now, that may be a large leap of faith for some to take in, but truly, historians now are all saying what I just told you. So, indirectly, the Africans and later the African Americans were very much involved in the other colonies getting a foothold or getting a license to get a foothold in this country. That's, again, I'll repeat myself, that's monumental. Also, here's something very, very, very strange. During, we only have about 5 minutes left, so let me speed it up a little bit. From 1619 to 1670, 71, 72, 73, that range set up to 1676. Those Africans who gave birth to offsprings here, who we would call now African Americans, and the range of contributions that they made to the survival of Virginia took place over several decades. They fought in wars, Indian wars. They fought. They died. Some became heroes. They were instrumental in the survival of the first American colony. They could make it possible for the rest of the colonies to come into existence and to also survive. They came in at a time when, as I said earlier, there were no restrictions culturally or legally on their movements, on them having and owning property. Many of those original Africans would themselves hire indentured servants, put them to work for a term of number of years, and many of them would, as I said, become prominent individuals. But there came a period when Virginia was beginning to have more Africans than I guess they were comfortable with. They were beginning to have, as I mentioned earlier, whites coming from England, Ireland, who were poor and were being mistreated by the governor and the wealth, the 1% at that time. There arose a gentleman who became a leader and led something called, was it Boxer Rebellion? You know that from history, when blacks and whites got together and waged a war to dethrone the English monarch. No, he wasn't a monarch, basically governor of Virginia. We were successful in the very beginning. He got tricked at the end and end up losing all the gains that they made. And in that process, the governor of Virginia and the king, etc., said the Africans played a significant role in their numbers and their skills in almost defeating us and taking Virginia away from us, that they posed a threat. And we see, despite all of their contributions, we begin to see laws. And remember, England and now America prides itself on being a nation of laws. They started passing laws directly aimed at curtailing the freedom, the progress of the African. And some of the first laws that were passed as early as after the 1660, that war that I just mentioned, is when some of these laws started to come into place. They 1660, I think it was 1670, they instilled universal slavery in the colony, came into existence, and meaning that the indentured servitude classification was on its way out. Africans coming into the colony were going to be slaves. Then laws, slaves for life. Then laws saying that Africans couldn't marry Europeans. Europeans couldn't marry Africans. Then laws saying that the status of all children would be tied to the mother's status, which is an indirect way of saying that if African men couldn't marry white women and they married African women who were slaves, their children would be slaves for life, restricting the ability of African men who had prospered and who were free from being able to marry African women and then have children who would be free. And for those whites who had indentured servants or who had African slaves who wanted to grant them freedom, they couldn't. The only exception was that if you granted freedom, you had to pay the expense of getting them out of the colony and resettle someplace else. They could not remain in the colony after you set them free. Then, of course, as I mentioned, they outlawed mixed marriages. If you mixed marriage child out of wedlock, for example, born to a European woman, that child would be, this is a little complicated, the child would be an indentured servant for 30 years, suggesting that that child, out of this mixed marriage, out of wedlock, was an exception to being a slave for life. And I have run out of time, folks. Bottom line here is that where we are today, where we've been as relates to black-white relationships for the last 400 years, did not start out the way it is today, or in those 200-300-year period of slavery. It gradually changed, and I will get into some of that on our next show. I'm sorry that I couldn't cover more. I hope I didn't leave you confused, because I tried to cover so much in such short period of time. Thanks, everyone. See you next week.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.